When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, the podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my good friend, Kyle Schoenwell. Kyle, how you doing?
Good. I'm just sorting through all my GameStop stock over here.
Man, Revenge of the Nerds. The time that was prophesied has come about.
My week was my baby, WandaVision, and following the stock market with this GameStop stuff. Unbelievable.
What a
week. For those of you who don't know, you don't have to get into it, but GameStop Reddit nerds took over the stock market this week and kind of caused a tizzy, and I kind of love it because Wall Street is corrupt and people are just now finding that out, and I love it.
You're here.
So, yeah, that was my week.
Wow.
But, dude, we now interrupt this program of me talking about GameStop to talk about we now interrupt this program.
Wow.
Dude.
Nice segue.
I posted one story after I got finished watching this. I watched it at like 9 a.m. on Friday, mm-hmm. and I was just like, what? Wow. I just loved it so much. And then I was so mad at you because I was texting you in all caps, we need to record right now. And you were like, I'm working. I'm like, I don't care. Like, how do we figure this out? So that was my excitement level for this episode.
Look, I just am very grateful and like a little bit proud that I made it all the way through Friday without any spoilers. Actually, even to the point where I'm realizing now I never went back and watched it, but I didn't even watch the promo that came out a day or two before the episode, just because, like, you and I have talked about this, how I'm always nervous that little trailer type things like that will give away more than I want to be given away. I don't know if that was the case here, but I did really like going into it totally blind.
I kind of regretted watching it. I did see it. And I'm with you. I wish I knew nothing, but I'll remember that for this next week. You know what's one of my most insane things about this show? Is it feels like this episode gave us so many answers, and I called you about this immediately.
Right.
Which is great. But then it hit me. We still have 5 more episodes. Like, we're not even halfway.
Yeah.
That's important to remember, I think, because it's starting to feel like we're getting it all figured out, which inevitably means we aren't getting it all figured out. There's no way.
Right.
Because they got to carry a plot for 5 more episodes.
No, well, that's what I love, you know, because it's like we've talked about that with Endgame, where, you know, people theorize and you spend all this time trying to figure out exactly what's going to happen. And I feel like in this episode, we basically got the answers that most people were thinking would not be coming until like the very end of this series.
Yes, like Endgame.
Yeah, and I love that because it's like we've talked this whole time about how, you know, we kind of have to sit back and trust that Marvel is not going to do the obvious thing because they've gotten really good at not doing that in recent years. And I think that, to me, I mean, obviously it remains to be seen, but this is a great sign in that direction that, you know, we're getting everything we thought right at the top. And then now it's like, again, I mean, and this is another fun thing is all of the kind of speculation has been so based in that direction that now, like, no one really can say that they know where it's going from here, right? Like House of M like we've kind of we've hit this stuff. Like everyone's been like, oh, is this something that Wanda's making? And like how is, and it's like all of this is kind of, I mean, we're going to talk about the episode, but
have you heard of House of M? Which is a very reasonable comment, but one that I've gotten from 1,000 different people.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, yes, I have heard of it at this point, and they're not following it directly. So stop asking if I've heard it.
It's so funny how many people I see asking about, like, but wait, when are the mutants going to come into play? And I'm like, well, one, they don't exist in the MCU. I don't know that they, and of course, a lot of people are saying that this is going to be the way that they do come into existence in the MCU. But all of this is stuff where I'm like, this is all the kind of like speculation that has nothing to do with the show that we're actually being given right now.
I also think like it would just be way premature. Like we know they're coming maybe 5 years down the road, but if they introduce mutants right now, they got to kind of carry that thread throughout a little bit.
Right.
And I just don't think there's going to be mutants in Spider-Man 3 and in Thor and, I don't know, Black Panther 2. Like, these are all movies that we know are confirmed before any X-Men type movie, so.
Right.
Also, guys, oh my gosh. Like, okay, hold on. I was going to say about Endgame really quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Just to reiterate what you said, like, what's amazing is, if you remember, all of us fans were like theorizing what's going to happen in this movie. Are they going to get the stones together and fight Thanos? And how can they reverse it? Like maybe they're not actually gone or, and then it was amazing. You're watching Endgame and we talked about this on the episode, but the first 30 minutes is basically what we thought the movie was going to be.
Right.
Which was they go, they find Thanos and they kill him. And it's kind of like the writers were saying, hey, that's the movie you thought you're going to get. And nobody predicted what was going to happen really after that.
Right.
And so just to reiterate, I hope that's kind of what happens with this show. Like, this show has been so bold and so fun through four episodes that I just pray they keep that boldness up. Like, don't cater to the obvious. Like, keep going with something unique. And that's what reminds me of my other tangent, which is just that I love that the MCU is its own thing.
Right.
And I fear, here's something I fear, Robbie, okay? In this community, this fan community, I sometimes worry that too many of us are so fixated on figuring out what the next episode is going to be about or finding this Easter egg because it could mean this, it could mean mutants, it could mean blah, 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 or like so fixated on this comic did this and this comic did this and if they merge in this, and I love those things.
Right.
But if you get so fixated on it, I fear we miss just the fun of watching the show. Like, this is new content that right. we'll never get again.
Right.
They may shut down next week. You never know. So just enjoy this while you have it. And that's not a cop-out to say, like, thinking about it is bad or theorizing is bad, because I love that. And we're about to do that for another hour. But I just fear that we get too lost in this stuff. And instead of focusing on what happened in the episode and what we actually can go on, we pull out these little thread lines and go like hours on this is what could happen. And then I think that only leads to missed expectations, which isn't fair to the show.
Right.
Because they're already doing it as well as possible and they don't have your expectations in mind. Plus, they've never directly like translated these comics like literally. So it's fun to kind of get Easter eggs here and there and pull from this, but the MCU is a separate thing. It's not the comic universe.
Right. Yeah, and that just makes me think of Endgame again, because like you're saying, everyone kind of had their, based on, you know, Infinity War was totally different, but had some basis in the Infinity Gauntlet story. And Endgame, then people were kind of trying to, again, extrapolate from the comics how that was wrapped up and then how the MCU Infinity Saga could be wrapped up. But I think you're right. I mean, after that initial, you know, 25 minutes or whatever, the rest of that movie really does not have an analog in the comics. Like, and it wound up being, you know, the most successful movie, I guess, of all time by some metrics. And I love that what it did in getting there was really zoom in on these characters and have in some ways a lot less action than people probably would have expected. And it was just very, it was very character driven and very performance driven. And that's one of the reasons that that movie sits with me so much. And what I love about WandaVision is I feel like we're getting the same kind of character focus and like zoomed in, like really carefully told story here. And I don't want that to be just sort of airbrushed away as, you know, the way of getting to the next big event or something, you know, like,
which is why I don't think they will do that. Like, right. I don't think they will do mutant stuff. Like, it's fun to theorize about, but it would just be so out of left field to all of a sudden introduce something that integral to the upcoming phase.
Right.
Just kind of willy-nilly. Like you said, Marvel has always done such a good job, I think, of letting stories be character-driven and ground level when they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Marvel is good at reminding us that we care more about the characters than we do about the next big event.
Right, right.
So also, just kind of regarding the mutant thing before we move on, I'm going to reiterate what I've said on this podcast, I think, three times. I'm actually legitimately scared about it. I am, because I just don't know that fundamentally I want a universe where the Avengers exist and mutants exist. If they go ahead and reboot X-Men and make like an MCU, like X-Men, like mutant world, but it just never interacts with the Avengers world, I would be totally down with that.
Yeah,
totally.
Same.
But the whole point of the Avengers is that it's a select group of like elite individuals to protect Earth and other places.
Right.
But how does that work if there's another 40% of the population that has a mutant gene and puts them on the same level? And I'm not mocking that. I'm right. just saying, like, why is Iron Man at all special or even Captain America?
Right.
When there's guys that can float around controlling metal. If there's just one of them, maybe it makes sense. But to have half the world be that way, it just doesn't work. I don't know. Like, when I said I was nervous about the new phase with WandaVision or Falcon the Winter Soldier, that was a different set of nerves. That was more just like, oh, I hope it's good and all that. This is actually a genuine fear. I'm nervous that they're going to bring in the X-Men and I'm going to not like it because I don't think it works at its core. End of rant.
I think that it would only work, they could do it any number of ways, but if they were going to bring it into the MCU, I think it would have to be such a small, small, small percentage of the population that it could basically be seen as like the mutants are just this very insignificant subgroup to where they're almost just another Avengers like sized team, you know, which I don't think that they would do.
Well, and to end my rant, like I know that in the comic universe, they do sometimes interact. I get that. But
right.
again, this is a different thing. They haven't given us indication that mutants exist in this thing.
Well, and I think it's, to me, and we talked about this, I think, briefly for Days of Future Past, but, you know, obviously we've seen Thanos now, and we've seen Rocket and Groot and all of this kind of crazy stuff. But in terms of the Earth-centered MCU, I still think, even as it's gotten way big in sci-fi, that it's kind of rooted in that first Iron Man and that they at least try to give us some kind of, like, in-world explanation for how someone comes about having these powers. And,
absolutely. Right, everybody.
Like Wanda, who her powers are pretty crazy, clearly come from the Mind Stone. And, like, Captain Marvel, whose powers are crazy, come from the Tesseract. And so it's like you kind of see in a way that is satisfying and feels earned. And I just,
right.
again, don't think that it fits with the DNA to suddenly have people that can just like turn their whole body into ice because of their DNA that they were born with. Like, I just don't
either.
it would seem to be kind of a jarring addition, but you know,
again, okay, this is not an enjoyable off topic subject. I am getting in a bad mood when I really want to talk about this show, which I love so much. Can we do some leftovers, please?
Yes.
From
please.
Listeners that wrote in. I can't believe we missed talking about the Hydra Soak commercial. We talked about the commercials in the first two episodes. We never brought it up.
Right.
That's pretty wild.
Right.
And bad of us. So shame on us.
And I don't think we even talked. I think we previewed the Strucker watch commercial as we were talking about episode one. But then whenever we got to episode two, I don't even think we spent a ton of time there. So I think just in general, we failed to give commercials their due.
Yeah, I'm not going to overanalyze it, but they're obviously important events in Wanda's life or something that has meaning to it. I don't know that they were meant to be analyzed beyond the fact that they're just events in Wanda's life. Like I saw some listeners write in that maybe the toaster is representative of the dud bomb because it's a toaster. And I'm like, I don't know that that's what they were thinking personally. I'm not belittling that opinion, but the Hydra Soak one is interesting, like with the slogan, find the goddess within.
Right.
I found that to be really interesting.
Right.
I don't know. What do you think? Is there more there, or is it just, hey, these are fun little things in Wanda's memory?
I mean, I definitely think that, I think it could be both, because I haven't thought about the dud bomb like that with the toaster, but I mean, there is like a weirdly long pause in that commercial where
right.
they're watching for the toaster to finish. And,
yeah, right.
and that does, you know, that is an interesting analogy to draw. So whoever sent that in, props. But I,
sure.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I could see, and by the way, that's the kind of Easter egg that I love, right? Like we've talked about this before. Like it's just sort of it's like, if you know, but it's not some kind of thing that you have to,
yes,
you know, I'd be doing all this homework to understand. But I mean,
like thus far, it does not appear that August 23rd has any significance.
Right.
We don't think yet. Maybe I'll still be wrong. But that's where I say it might just end up being Easter eggs like that, where
right.
if you want to draw the 23-8 or whatever, like they do in Europe.
right.
Which, again, I'm fine with people doing. I love it. Also, somebody told us that we talked about Wanda's twins, obviously, and then the comics, they become Wiccan and Speed. And we did talk about how the kids get powers, but I know you have told me, again, to tie back to our first rant, the reason we don't bring that up necessarily is because it doesn't appear that they're always literally adopting these comics. So even that comic, you were telling me it's some weird thing where it's like not the kids are not even, they're kind of like spiritual kids inheriting
right.
these like fake twins persona.
Right.
kind of.
Which is the
right.
most comic book story in the world.
Right, and that's someone who doesn't read comics trying to explain that, so that makes it even more funny. Somebody said, are the sitcoms going to be confirmed through the 2000s? I think they had read that. It's interesting because before the episode they sent that, then we didn't get a sitcom vibe
right.
in episode 4, obviously. I do, however, personally think they're going to go back to it.
Yeah.
Could be wrong.
I feel like the title of this episode suggests as much, too.
Yeah, right. That they're just pausing this. I think they're going to do 80s, 90s, 2000s. I don't know if that is confirmed. That's what I think they're going to do.
Uh-huh.
So that's three more episodes, and then the last two are not in the sitcom. That's what I would think. And then two other quick leftovers. Well, you know what? One of these I'm going to save because it's talking again about Vision's role. And did Sword get a hold of Vision's body and try to weaponize him? Is like Wanda sedated in that way? And I think now this episode shows that that's probably not the case. So let's get into Vision's role in a second. And then lastly, someone just brought up, is AIM at all tied to this? And that's interesting because for those of you who don't know, AIM stands for Advanced Idea Mechanics. And what's interesting is in the Avengers video game, for example, and I think, Robbie, in comic universe, AIM at times had a little bit more of a malicious role, but they've already brought AIM into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, so not including comics or the video games or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And AIM in the MCU, you know, they didn't set it up like it was going to be this crazy, like, terror organization or anything, right?
Right.
It's kind of just Killian, and they're doing some, like, biotech and some, you know, work with human genetics and stuff.
Right.
Whereas, like, when I played that game, it's like, okay, AIM is clearly in some ways meant to be more like they took over the world kind of
right.
in this other game. So I don't know that AIM is going to play a role in this. I think are the hexagons throwing people off? Is that part of it too?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of focus on the hexagons.
Do you think they have a role in this or not? Yeah, probably not in the cinematic universe.
I mean, I definitely feel like, you know, it's funny that it's Iron Man 3 because I think in Shang-Chi, we're going to get this expansion on the actual Mandarin. And so it's kind of taking something that was sort of a joke or a fake thing in that movie and showing the real version of it. And in some ways I could see them going back and taking whatever the seed of AIM was in Iron Man 3 and expanding on that to make it a bigger organization. But yeah,
it is possible.
It is. Yeah, it's possible. I think it would be fun. I always love when they kind of mine their own past. Like we talked about that with Far From Home. But yeah, at this point, I would personally think that that would be too many cooks in the kitchen since we've just been introduced to S.W.O.R.D. Like, I don't know that we need another kind of faceless organization in play here.
Right. Okay, so we now interrupt the leftovers, this program, for you to give us an intro. Let's do it. Let's go. Let's do it.
All right, WandaVision episode 4, again titled We Interrupt This Program, directed by Matt Shakman once again. This one is written by, this is going to be awful, Bobak Esfarjani and Megan McDonnell. This time we have a couple of new faces showing up. Well, new faces to WandaVision, recognizable faces for fans of the MCU in the form of Kat Dennings as Darcy Lewis and Randall Park as Jimmy Woo. And then, of course, we have Teyana Paris playing a larger role now officially as Monica Rambeau rather than Geraldine as we've seen her until now.
Okay, let's go through this. Can we talk about the fact that this may be one of my top five favorite pre-introduction scenes ever? The reverse blip.
Oh, man.
The reverse blip. Anytime that they can give us more shout-outs to the impact of that snap just makes it even better. I mean, it just keeps getting better for me.
Right.
What a cool visual. And by the way, they clearly are not short on budget thus far because that looked as good as it should look.
Yeah.
It looked movie quality. This is the first episode where it kind of felt like we're watching a full-blown MCU film.
Yeah, just chopped exactly.
Up, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
But anyways, shout out to our friend Grace. She pointed out that what was so fun about that blip, I think, was we've seen the reverse snapshot, if you will, in Far From Home, but in a very, like, joking, lighthearted way.
Right.
With the band playing on the basketball court. It was kind of fun to see the traumatic events of the reverse blip in a hospital.
Right.
Right? Like, all the patients coming back and the panic of, like, what? Where's my mom? What is going on? Why are all these people panicking? That was really cool for me.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it also makes me wonder, you know, we're always kind of talking about our rewatch order and how it will be tweaked moving forward with Black Widow and stuff. It almost makes me wonder if WandaVision is going to wind up going ahead of Far From Home in our watch order here, because I really like this as a follow-up to Endgame.
The first time we've ever gotten a timeline now. Right.
Right.
Because of that.
Yeah. I mean, that whole scene was like, it felt very Walking Dead in an awesome way. And yeah, you're right. It was like the most, we go from like marching band showing up in the middle of a basketball game, which is hilarious and Far From Home, to this like, yeah, really kind of terrifying and tragic re-entry for Monica, where it's like last thing she was in the hospital with her mom, who had just come back from a successful surgery, and now also just waking, like coming back in a hospital is just, it would just be the worst way to re-enter. And then yeah, to find out that your mom has been gone for 2 years or 3 years, which is again the other kind of really fun thing is that we're now getting that direct through line from Captain Marvel to hear with Monica, which is something that I've been excited for.
There was even a scene with Captain Marvel's voice edited in. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did. The Lieutenant Trouble line.
Right.
Yeah.
Timeline-wise, we know the blip happens, so that means that's Endgame happening, right? So they brought everyone back, so Endgame fight is going on in New York while she's kind of getting out of the hospital. Then it says 3 weeks later, and then it's a day later after that. So we're only like 3 weeks and a day from Endgame finishing.
Right.
Whereas Far From Home seems to be taking place. Yeah, we know the blip, but there's time where the kids have to get back to school. The school has to reorganize. Then they're going to go on a trip.
Right.
So I would anticipate Far From Home being more like 6 months after Endgame. I mean, there's also time for people to build memorials to the Avengers and to Tony Stark and stuff like that. So maybe 3 to 6 months. So yeah, does WandaVision end up lasting that long? We don't know that yet. Yeah. I would be surprised, though.
Well, no, yeah.
I would think they would get this settled in a matter of weeks.
Right. That's why I'm thinking we would maybe change up the start of our next phase here by having WandaVision there at the start. Although, again, you know, it'll be interesting to see how Falcon Winter Soldier and Black Widow does all this. But I think the bigger takeaway is this is exactly what you and I have been asking for ever since Endgame. We've been asking just like we don't have to be obsessively retrospective, but also don't.
They keep doing it.
Yeah, it's a great like, I mean, this episode was the perfect version of what we've asked for, in that it's so rooted in what Endgame was. There's so many references to it, like, everywhere, because obviously it was such this massive thing. We talked about what is the Endgame version of the first Avengers, like the Battle of New York fallout that was referenced so much in Phase 2. And this is obviously a much bigger thing than that in terms of the impact it had. And I just think already between Far From Home and this episode, it's just been handled so perfectly, in my opinion.
I think that's why we're loving it so much, because we did. We begged for that exactly. If Endgame was the explosion, we wanted the first year or so to just deal with the fallout of that instead of moving forward to a new thing. And so far, the only things we've gotten are that, which is so fun. Spider-Man did that, and now this show also just giving us ties to what does it look like post-Endgame.
Right.
They are doing it. They're doing exactly what we asked, which I love.
Right.
By the way, I'm fine with them not always doing exactly what I ask, but in this case, I love it. I was struck watching this episode. This episode's kind of a game changer, right?
Because for sure,
we've gotten the sitcom thing and hints of there being this outside world. But here they finally just kind of rewound the story and basically told us this is what's going on in the real world, like kind of shot for shot. Not as much mystery there. I was struck by how much this feels officially like a suspense TV show in that way, because again, not to always bring up Lost, but if you notice, what they did was they just gave us little hints of this plot, what could be going on. And right at the end of episode 3, when you want to know, oh, what's Wanda doing? Why would she throw Geraldine out? Holy crap, is she running this all? Instead of advancing that plot, right there they pause. They make us wait a week with that cliffhanger. And then the very next week, instead of giving us the direct answer of what goes on beyond that, they go back and show us a different perspective of the first 3 episodes, essentially. So we ultimately stopped kind of at the exact same point. We advanced the plot no further, but we just like filled in all the details. And I was just struck how lost that is, or how TV show that is, you know? That's not a format they would tell in a movie. On the other hand, like we said earlier, this was the first episode with the widescreen, with the full-blown, like, production that it felt like a movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, so and even
in some ways, it still has both vibes going for it.
Yeah, I mean, even the follow-up of the scene within sitcom world, I noticed this time was in widescreen, right? Which added a whole different kind of vibe to that.
And which, by the way, they keep doing as a visual cue. Anytime they go real world, it slowly stretches widescreen.
Right.
Whenever they go back to Westview, it kind of shrinks to the 4x3.
Right. Well, but and that's why I'm curious to see, because does it shrink back by the end whenever they're on the couch? Because it starts not. Like, whenever she and Vision are having that conversation and she's saying that they can't leave, which we'll get to here in a second, I thought it was still widescreen.
This is obviously not something easily fact check at this exact moment, but it might be widescreen there saying whenever Wanda's not in Westview mentally. Yeah.
That's what I'm wondering.
I'd have to check that.
Which would be great. Yeah, we'll have to go back and look, or if someone else has caught that.
Let us know.
Yeah, so before we get too far ahead, my next kind of big question, which just, I guess, tends to happen whenever we're talking about anything related to Captain Marvel here, is how long now has this organization S.W.O.R.D. been around? Because we find out here after the hospital scene, Monica gets there and we see her mom's picture on the wall, and we see that almost in the same way that Peggy founded S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, we see Maria Rambeau founded S.W.O.R.D. And I love this. I love what, you know, the background we're getting on Monica, and I love the way, yeah, it's so cool because you see the same way that the events of Captain Marvel had an impact on Fury and kind of started the Avengers initiative, that Monica now, since she was a little girl, has been aware that there are these massive alien forces out there, and it's just totally shaped the way she's been living. But again, my question there is, like, I feel like these guys might have been helpful, you know, whenever Thanos invaded the planet twice.
Okay. Hold on. Easy. We don't know that they're that advanced yet. Don't pick holes in Infinity War and Endgame, but it is interesting to think how long they've been around. I mean, clearly what's interesting is they kept talking about the space flight missions, right? So it does seem to be very obviously fitting its name, where S.H.I.E.L.D. was kind of set on protecting Earth and trying to, you know, neutralize threats. And when they actually advanced themselves to building weapons, that got controversial in Avengers 1, in Winter Soldier. Whereas this, it would appear they're kind of trying to, like, go out like a sword, space missions, learn that side of it. How long has it been around is a fascinating question.
Yeah.
Because I guess Endgame only happened 3 weeks ago. So it's been around.
Right. I mean,
what I think you need to remember about Endgame and Infinity War is this is important. Sounds like I'm making this up, but they were so caught off guard. Like, I fault Avengers 1 a little more in the Battle of New York when I say scramble the jets.
Right.
Like, because they had 20 minutes to go do that. But like Infinity War, they got assaulted in Wakanda in a matter of minutes. They couldn't have sent out a message to like the U.S. Army to come help or to S.W.O.R.D. in that way.
Right.
And same with Endgame. They thought they were just bringing people back. They did not know that Thanos was going to come back and have an entire... So like the second they bring people back, they literally get hit by a missile. My point is, it's fair for me to believe that S.W.O.R.D. could not have been scrambled in time.
No, and to be fair, whenever I say invaded twice, I'm not talking about Endgame. I'm talking about Avengers 1 and Infinity War. And I'm with you. I feel like the other thing...
Well, Avengers 1 is where I would place the fault, I guess, is my point.
Right,
if
same.
I had to have...
Because one thing I haven't thought of with Infinity War in that respect is you do have to remember that they're in Wakanda, which... from what I understand, is probably not even visible by satellite, you know, like because of the way it's hidden. So yeah, I that actually checks out to me that they wouldn't be able to get there.
With Avengers 1, which I literally watched last night because we're rewatching again. Oh my gosh, so sue me. I'm literally on Avengers 1. Oh,
nice.
Maternity and paternity leave. What do? You watch Marvel movies. But, you know, we're led to believe that Nick Fury is in direct contact with that board of directors or whatever for the world.
Uh-huh.
And so surely he's told them, we've lost this Tesseract. So I feel like it's not excusable. Like, they should have the army ready. Like, they know there's already aliens on Earth somewhere. Loki's running around. They know they don't have it.
Right.
So I would just be, like, hyper-prepared, especially in a place like New York or D.C., you know? So that's where I would place the fault. If there was organizations, they should have helped at that point.
Right.
Let's move on with this show, though, please.
But no, I do think that's just I'm sure we're going to get answers there, but that's one of the questions that I'm kind of looking forward to seeing answered on a larger level. Just like, what has S.W.O.R.D. been up to and what impact have they had on the MCU in general?
Right. Okay, two details that I loved. The Jimmy Woo card trick. Did you catch that? That he's been practicing magic?
Yes.
Come on, I feel like no one noticed that, but that was incredible. What a little Easter egg from Ant-Man. So
Man.
Fun. By the way, I don't know how you felt. I actually haven't talked to you about this. I loved Jimmy Woo and Darcy's characters.
Yeah.
I mean, I did. I didn't think Darcy, you know, Darcy's still Darcy to me.
Right.
I don't know if she fits perfectly, but it was fun to bring her back in and kind of tie in Thor in that way.
Right.
But Jimmy Woo, just being like such a genuinely nice guy, like a youth pastor guy, like the whole joke about wanting the kids instead of the chips, that was genuinely really funny and heartwarming.
Well, and perfectly, like, you know, we've talked about how it's so, one of the interesting things with the MCU is that these characters get passed around to different writers and directors. And so it's always interesting to see how consistent their different iterations are. And I was just struck by how well they captured the vibe that Ant-Man and the Wasp gave this character. Like, it feels like they just didn't miss a beat.
What I love about him is that he still seems to take things seriously enough. He's just genuinely a goober.
Right.
So it's not that he's making a joke of everything. He's just a weirdo. And I love it. He's like a heartwarming weirdo. And by the way, another thing I love is that that character would be in charge of like controlling an Avenger in Ant-Man and the Wasp. But that's what makes Marvel so genius, is keep it ground level again.
Right.
This guy's not trying to end the world or even kill Scott. It's just, Scott, we can't have you break house arrest, okay?
Right.
And they carry that same vibe over here, and I love it. So this is the stuff that Marvel does so well, and they're able to do so well because they built this thing.
Right.
This is why I love it, everybody.
Well, and one of the things that I really liked about bringing Darcy in, because I've always been like, how on earth do you bring Darcy back at all, much less into this show specifically?
Yep.
But I like that we now find out that Darcy has gone on to get her PhD in astrophysics. You know, because like,
but that's totally believable.
No, totally.
That's
totally. I mean, based on what she's seen. But I just think that's so interesting, right? Because like, she was always the kind of like airheaded intern that didn't really know what was going on and didn't really care. And now because we haven't seen that character since 2013, you know, so like.
But it makes sense to me because she's working with Selvig and Natalie Portman. So it's like she would have been right there on the forefront. It makes sense she'd get into it.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's just such a fun update on where, and again, kind of respecting the real life consequences here of the things that have gone on. And therefore, like, rather than this character being sort of static and then just being pulled and plopped right back in, you're right, she still has the same personality, but it's fun to see that she's actually moved forward and now has, like, she's the one that is contributing to this in the most significant way, really, because she's the one that realizes that it's a TV signal being played out and gets it all set up. And I just think it's cool to see that character be given such a significant role.
Here's what I'm enjoying right now about this podcast, Robbie, is that this is coming together kind of exactly how I envisioned it. We're kind of giving the review of the episode by reviewing these characters and all that. And for the back half of this, I still have a bunch of questions I just want to ask and talk about, discuss, theorize. But yeah, the episode was a game changer. I love the acting, the plot, the directing, the writing. It's clear to me the quality is going to be on the top level.
Right.
Like, this is about as good as it gets, which is, again, such an ease on my concerns ahead of time. Remember, we talked about this in our preview episode.
Right.
How good would it look? How good would it be acted and directed and written? Would it feel like a step down? And to be honest, this hasn't felt like a step down. And not only that, I love The Mandalorian, but this feels like a step up from that as far as those things go.
Agreed.
Like, I think Matt Shakman directing all these episodes is becoming a key thing, because you're not getting these random episodes that are directed by somebody else that just has like some massive errors.
Right.
And then we just kind of move on. I love bringing people together, so that's where I'm torn. I get that, including lots of directors. But I'm enjoying, again, Marvel keeping this so tight.
Yeah. Consistency is key.
Quality and consistent content. Okay. I have to say a message we received that I thought was genius, this little detail.
Okay.
Austin, a listener, called the beekeeper suit being exactly what it was. We talked about, like, is it a villain? Is it a Nazi villain or whatever?
Right.
And oh my gosh, this is the best way to do it. And somebody else got this exactly right too, which is, it appears that whenever somebody goes into Westview with a modern technology thing, Wanda's powers or the Westview powers, whatever it is, somehow turns that thing into the correct timeline dated version of said thing, right? So he crawls in with a hazmat suit, and as he gets through, it turns into a jump rope and a beekeeper.
Right.
Or the helicopter goes in as a high-tech drone, and it gets shrunken down into a little toy helicopter.
Right.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. No, that is
awesome.
And
we got that answer. So
that
Austin did call that with the beekeeper suit, but I thought that was a genius way of doing that. That's better than like a Nazi bee villain.
Oh, I mean, debatable. A Nazi bee villain would be pretty great.
to be fair.
But no, that actually leads perfectly into what I wanted to talk about next, which is Monica's transformation. Because I think we don't get a totally clear answer on this, but I think we're left to assume that's what happens to her. She goes in and is kind of retrograded.
Right. Right. So that's another thing I had, is why would she go in with a sword necklace? but she didn't.
Right.
This episode told us that. She right. goes in and it kind of just turns her into the right. No, so here's the real question now, Robbie. Like Jimmy Woo literally asks, is she just playing this as like a deep cover thing? Or is she confused? Does it also turn, when a human goes through, does it change your personality? Like, is she putting on Geraldine to get to Wanda? We still don't know that part, I feel.
Yeah.
Or is she like warped in the same way the hazmat suit was warped? And she's having to like come to her senses and snap out of it. Literally, Jimmy Woo asks, is this a deep cover thing?
Yeah, yeah. No, and I like that that's still up in the air. I'm tempted now. I know last episode I said it sounded like she was undercover yep. because, you yep. know, and when they had that conversation, I'm almost tempted to go in the same. Opposite direction now.
Yep, same. She's warped now. That's what I changed my mind, I think.
Yeah. But I mean, I do think there at the end, like, whether it's Wanda saying Ultron that snaps her out of it or whether, you know, she's been snapped out of it right prior to that, I still think that, you know, like that is her coming back. But yeah, I don't know. That's just such an, it's such an interesting question still there. And I hope that we get a little bit more, you know, I'm sure we will. Cause now we're meeting back up with Monica, like you said, like Lost style after the kind of cliffhanger of episode 3. So I'm sure we're going to get her perspective now on everything that's happened since she's been in Westview. And probably just right. a lot of some more fun answers in general on what Westview is.
Right. Then, depending on Monica's answer about what her time was like in there, I wonder if they're going to start trying to do missions by sending people into the sitcoms.
Right.
And how is Wanda going to handle new characters? Right? So, like, let's say the sitcoms resume with the 80s. Do they go in there?
Right. Oh, man. Okay, which is another great... I'm glad you're saying this because one of the things I thought was the most interesting in terms of what was going on at the Sword base is them identifying the people yes. that are playing the roles as real people.
Right.
And
right.
it's unclear whether they've been... Well, maybe... I think... Did you catch whether they're bringing these people in like from... all over the world, they're being like Wanda.
Okay. Well, answer a better question for me because maybe the listeners can answer. I don't get this. What was the explanation we got from the cops? Okay, hold on. Is Westview real? Or is it East? I didn't get that. Is it Eastview that they're just calling Westview? That town that you can see beyond the force field?
Yeah.
Are those real buildings that were there? Because then my answer is, maybe those are just people that were in that village already.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean...
The cops don't want them to go in. What was the cops' role? Are they fake?
So I think...
And she brainwashed them?
Monica calls it selective amnesia. And that's what I'm... Like, I think that it is a real town, Westview, but that...
Is it called Eastview?
Well, no, I mean, I think that the town is Westview, and I think the cops are just, like, they've been, I think anyone in the surrounding area has been made to kind of forget about it, and so I think that they probably are Westview cops, but have...
So then those are Westview people in the town.
I think that would make sense. Playing those characters. That would make sense. Yeah, I mean, and that, man, that's just so interesting. Like... this idea that they've been, you know, like so clearly cast in roles. Like, and I love the way that they talk about it as it, like they're being forced to play out these roles that are not actually who they are. Like, and it makes that Dottie right. scene even more kind of chilling.
Okay. So that's the next question that then rises is why was Agnes and maybe Dottie? I don't know if I saw Dottie. Oh gosh. Now I'm blanking. But why was Agnes the one person who didn't have an identity matched yet?
Hmm.
On that chart.
Yeah.
She didn't have an identity matched. Then I feel like this episode gave us an answer to the question when we asked, what were they trying to say when they said, we are all... Well, what we know is, I don't think the answer is we are all dead.
Right.
I think it's maybe we are all trapped or...
Yeah.
Like we were going to say prisoner? You know what I'm saying? Like, but my point is, we know, well, we don't know, I guess. Gosh, I love this. We don't even know that. We don't know they're technically not dead, but I think because they match their identity, they're assuming they are alive playing those characters.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because they're saying that in the context of Geraldine, and they are...
Right.
It raises so many interesting questions about the awareness of, like, Herb. Like, is he... You know, because we see that moment when, like, Dottie breaks character. Like, how, you know, are they all kind of in this sitcom world and then they're just breaking for a few moments? Like, why is he, goes back again to, like, why he's sawing through the wall there.
Okay. So what if Agnes was one of the only people that's in there that wasn't already in Westview and is part of the villain, or she's part of this in some way? And so in that setting, their awareness is incredibly low, but someone like Agnes's awareness is high, and she is stirring the pot with characters like Herb. Like, I'd have to rewatch that scene again, but I don't think Herb is just saying, like, I don't think she belongs here, but maybe he's not aware of a lot of it. It's just Agnes saying, hey, you know what? Geraldine doesn't have a house and she's not here. And
right.
Like, is she the only one that's on a higher level playing field here?
You know, what it almost makes me think is that somehow...
And then why wouldn't Wanda's powers hit her then? Oh.
Well, see, I'm almost wondering...
Well, and then that leads me to one other massive question I have. I actually called you, and this was one of the first things I thought of.
Uh-huh.
I feel like finding this quote-unquote missing person in the witness protection program is going to be so key.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the beginning of the episode, we learn that Jimmy Woo is going to the town to look for that person. Then we find out that nobody actually knows this person.
Right.
So I called you and said, to me, it's one of three things, and I don't know which one yet. Is this a character that we totally don't know, is not from the comics, and is just a random person that they're looking for, and it's not that consequential? That's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Or is this a character we know but has not been in the MCU but we would recognize? Like a, I don't want to say, because I don't think it's this, but like a mutant or something like that.
Right.
That we would recognize. Or another comic character. Or is it option three, which is this a character we already know and love in the MCU? Like, I'm just going to say this, like my wife said, could it be Spider-Man, for example?
Hmm.
Now, I don't think it is because of Far From Home and all that. But, right. Like, is it a character that level? Because she was saying, with the timeline of the witness protection program, Spider-Man's identity being revealed, is he being protected? But now we think that this is ahead of that, right? So that would make sense because identity hasn't been revealed yet.
Right.
So, anyways, is it a character like that?
Yeah.
And I don't know. But is it Ralph? Is Ralph just a throwaway person that they use for jokes because Agnes is different? Or is Ralph actually somebody?
I think Ralph is either somebody or there's a reason why she references him the way she does. Even if it doesn't represent an actual physical person, I think that there's a significance to that in the way that she talks about him.
I'll say the Mephisto thing we talked about.
Right.
Seems still too far out there for this level of show. It seems like I don't need to bring in like a demon. I just want this to stay like ground level-ish, as ground level as it is,
right,
or can be. But theoretically, that theory would still apply after this episode. Like, I haven't ruled that out yet.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, here's what I'm starting to think. And, you know, again, this could be a shot in the dark, but as I'm thinking about the missing person thing, I'm wondering if Agnes did, like, I wonder if she somehow came into contact with Wanda and was somehow the impetus for all of this. Like, maybe was the one that convinced her to bring this kind of world about, or was at least somehow instrumental in bringing Westview about, and is thus the one that kind of disappeared inside of it and is maybe manipulating Wanda and has a reason for wanting to keep Westview around. And therefore, she knew that Geraldine was not supposed to be there and was thus trying to get her kind of found out and kicked out because she doesn't want her to undermine what they're doing in Westview.
Right. I like that. I think I like that more than there being a demon behind it. But right. We'd have to ask why. Yeah, we don't know Agnes's motivation. Why would she need Westview to exist in that theory?
Talking about like Lost, though, I would bet money that at some point, whether it's, you know, I could see it being like an episode 7 or 8 or even
you'll
9.
You'll get her perspective.
Yeah, we're going to get a great Catherine Hahn episode in the same way we kind of got the Monica Rambeau backstory here, which will be really fun.
I think it's important to note with the missing person that they reference him as a he multiple times. So that's why I'm not saying the missing person is specifically Agnes.
Oh, I didn't catch that. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because they say it's a guy.
Hmm.
Now, maybe that's a red herring and they're just trying to be dumb and throw us off, but they're looking for a guy.
Interesting.
Which is why I brought up Ralph.
So maybe that is Ralph. Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
But Ralph, it's possible that Ralph is also not a person. It's just a joke.
Right. While we're talking about gender, you know, misidentifications here, I feel like we have to give a shout out to the person that called from episode 1, from the beginning.
Yes.
That the hands there looked like...
looks feminine.
Yeah, and that and they said it might be Darcy watching. And that was such a crazy call right off the bat there. So props to whoever told us that, because that did not cross my mind, but that was obviously 100% correct.
No doubt. Okay, I got more things. Kind of a big picture thing is I'm again struck by what I said in the third episode. It feels too much like they're setting us up for a massive twist. Like, we got so many answers already.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when Monica Rambeau comes out and says, it's Wanda, it's all Wanda, that's confirming what we had talked about from day one, which is like, did she build this to cope with her problems? And right. It is Wanda that's the one in control and knowing this. Then with Agnes, you know, being the Agatha Harkness.
Mm-hmm.
Agnes, yeah, that's easy for me to say. With her being that character and wearing the witch shoes and being the person that doesn't have the identity and everybody tossing that out, it just feels like we have 5 episodes left. There's going to be something different in play.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean...
Doesn't it?
Well, it goes back to what we were saying, and sort of from a different perspective. Last week we were saying we've now gotten a third of the way through the show without seeing Jimmy Woo or Darcy, even though we know they're coming in. Well, now it's almost the opposite, where we still have technically over half of the show left. And now, yeah, we've gotten... all of the, like, everything that I was like, well, this still has to happen, all happened in, like, one episode, more or less. And that's why I'm so excited, because I'm like, yeah, I don't, they're going to have to do, like, they're not going to spend 5 episodes just showing us that, yes, this is a reality Wanda's constructed. I mean, because that's been pretty much made clear. I'm sure we're going to get some more, like, clarifications around how that happened. But I think, yeah, there's got to be more going on here, because we just have so much more runtime left. And we've talked about...
And I hope so.
For sure.
Because if there's not, I will be disappointed, I think.
Right, right. And, you know, again, just props to them for the execution here. And we'll have to wait and see how they stick the landing. But I think you're right. It seems like they're setting us up for at least one more curveball. And you know, I think we should say that Paul Bettany has talked about you know, the last chunk of this series as having right. some shocks. And
right.
So I think, you know, everything that we've seen points to the fact that we are not going to be getting, again, exactly this adaptation of House of M or anything else that people have been kind of assuming. I think that it's just, you know, again, they're going to tell their own story, and I'm excited to see what that is.
I hope they do.
Yeah.
Somebody wrote in and asked, are the twins real? And that got me thinking, I just jotted in my notes, what is real? I think what is real is the entire point of our discussion as far as theorizing goes.
Right.
We're trying to figure out what is real. Are the twins real? I don't think so, but I don't know that. But then that also makes me believe, like, well, what is Agnes's role? Is she real? And then more importantly, what is Vision? So we got that jump scare scene, which was unbelievable, by the way.
Yeah.
The MCU has not done a scene like that ever,
no.
To my knowledge.
No.
That was the first time where I was like, that's genuinely kind of creepy and dark.
Yeah.
When she looks up and it's dead Vision, just for a second, and me and Annika, like, grabbed each other, like, what the heck?
Man.
And I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
I've said this before. I want there to be a slightly darker MCU chapter, right? Like, I want there to be some stories that have that. Not all of them, but I've told you before, like, Killmonger, I think, could have been more violent if you really wanted to make it. Sorry, it's tangent, but you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
So I love that I got this one scene of, like, this is genuinely creepy. Like, that's a little bit weird.
Yeah.
But I can't figure out Vision. Because if he is dead and Wanda's just making this to cope, like we said, why does he sometimes snap out of it and, like, realize things?
Right.
And then Robbie, and he has old memories. Did somebody salvage his body? I can't figure out Vision. And then, by the way, the censorship thing I thought was genius. When Darcy says, somebody's censoring these broadcasts, I had chills for days. What was so cool for me is we've seen those glitches, right?
Right.
And the rewind and all that.
But they haven't.
But now, right, now we're seeing from that perspective, they didn't get to see that happen.
Yeah.
The Betty scene. All Darcy sees is the glass cracks, and then they joke about the housewife, and they move on. I have chills right now, literally. That's why I'm having a hard time talking. But now, on the outside, Wanda or somebody or Agnes, somebody, Ralph, is able to cut those scenes out for the broadcast to the outside world. What the frick?
I mean, so let's talk about that whole final scene where we basically see, like, in the extended version of what we saw at the end of last episode. Because it starts right where last thing we saw was Wanda confronting Geraldine, and then it cuts to Vision coming in and Wanda saying that Geraldine went home. So this time we actually got to see more of how that conversation went, which was really interesting because we see Wanda, the most she's ever broken character, where she's basically talking about, she's talking with this awareness that she has created Westview now.
Oh my gosh, I got chills again.
You know, because she's like, how you said Ultron, how would you know about Ultron? Like, you shouldn't be here. And then, yeah, we see her just, it's actually, it was also kind of a fun shout out to that scene in Civil War, you know, where she forces Vision down through all the floors of the Avenger facility. And it's sort of the same visual here, but she's pushing Geraldine / Monica out through all of the, you know, at the walls and the fences all the way out to the edge of Westview.
But then we also learn that she knows Vision's dead.
Right. Okay. And Darcy also makes a comment about that earlier that I meant to mention.
Right.
Where, again, talking about kind of the consequences of what we saw happening in Infinity War and Endgame. And you and I have actually had that conversation in the past. I can't remember if we brought this up on the podcast. But there are all these questions around, like, what does the public know about what happened in Wakanda and what happened
a lot
in that final battle.
Apparently.
Yeah, apparently a lot. Because, you know, like, we've wondered, obviously people know that Tony Stark somehow is responsible for defeating Thanos. But yeah, like, we've wondered, do people know, like, specifically, I think we wondered, like, what people know about Vision. And, you know, like, what people know about Cap and, like, all this, and that stuff I'm sure will be answered more in Falcon Winter Soldier. But again, I love that here we get this clear shout out that, like, yeah, people know that Vision is dead.
Which is one of my favorite lines in the episode, by the way, which was, I know this has been a really weird year for our planet, but he's dead, right? Like, dead. Yeah. But Wanda knows it too. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
And then that was the most disturbing scene, though, was that Wanda, after saying that to Geraldine about you shouldn't know Ultron, is got these tears in her eyes. And a listener wrote this in that it's almost more that she came off more like guilty rather than evil.
Hmm.
Or like she has tears in her eyes about the whole situation. And my favorite line of the entire show was when Vision says, Wanda, like, we don't have to be here. We can go anywhere else. And she says, no, we can't.
Right.
And I think that's acknowledging she knows he's dead. And the only way that she can live this life with him is if she builds Westview.
Well,
and then when she says, don't worry, I have everything under control, is chills AF, but also terrifying, kind of.
Again, that's what makes me think that.
Hold on. And then I have to add, that Vision's look in his face is significant. It's important.
Yeah.
Because he looks flustered, like he doesn't trust her anymore.
Right.
He has this 1 second where he's like, you don't have everything under control. But again, if Vision's dead, why does he have that kind of reaction ever?
Like if he's just a creation of hers, then...
I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, though, that's why I feel like there is something... Like, I feel like Agnes has some kind of power here. And I wonder if, like, you know, to the extent there is a Mephisto-type situation, well, I think it would be the kind of, like, deal with the devil, classic Twilight Zone premise here of, like, I can give you this chance to be with Vision, even bringing Vision back in a way, but only in this like very specific kind of hollow manner. And again, I have no reason to believe that's just like a theory here, but like that would make it make sense why, you know, like Wanda could use her powers to kind of create this world, but you wonder, like, could Wanda herself, like, the way we see Vision there, I guess you can take it in two ways, right? You could either see that as Wanda just having this kind of
nightmare
trauma. Yeah, and she's, like, remembering that Vision is actually dead. Or it could be that in the same way, you know, Dottie for a second there breaks character and becomes, like, who she actually is, Vision there, like, that is actually the reanimated corpse of Vision. And for a second, she's seeing him as he actually is, not as she's right. kind of colored him over to be, which is way freakier to me.
Side note, listeners, message us. Was Dottie's identity marked? Or is Dottie like Agnes and they didn't know who that was? Please message me because I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember either. I'll have to rewatch.
I don't know how to respond to that because we don't know.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I think I tend to believe that he's actually dead because I think they're not going to reverse that. But I don't know then, like you're saying, how does that explain his reactions in that way unless somebody else has some control or he is alive in some facet. And yeah, obviously that's what we're going to get. That's what we're going to find out. One thing, so sidetracking here a little bit. You and I have always praised Marvel for their placements of actual songs, not their scores. We uh-huh. love the Marvel scores. We feel like the themes could be better. But musically, one thing they've nailed is this Guardians of the Galaxy type using pop songs in the right spots.
Yeah.
And they're so good at it. My only time I've ever hated it was Captain Marvel, I'm Just a Girl, which just totally doesn't work. And I'll go on a different tangent. I got to bring Captain Marvel up every episode, right? So, totally my least favorite thing. My wife and I, every time we hear a popular song in a Marvel movie, look at each other and go, I'm just a girl, because we're making fun of that moment. It's so bad. Okay, anyways, golly.
Well, we've already made our Thor Dark World reference, you know, right, just by virtue right. of talking about Darcy in 2013. Darcy, so we've hit all right. of our contractual right. obligations now.
Right, yeah. We need to get sponsored by Thor the Dark World or Captain Marvel just to bring them up every time. Like $500 every time we bring it up. Okay, but I'm loving these musical placements, and I do think they're important. Maybe they're just Easter eggs, right? But one of the placements, for example, being Help Me, Rhonda, and they're cutting in Wanda.
Right.
Which I loved.
Yeah.
Then the key scene at the end of episode 3, Wake Up, Sleepy Jean, having kind of double meaning, right?
Yeah.
It's also ironic because it's this dark moment, but it's playing this really happy song. But also the double meaning of that.
I loved that placement. Yeah.
Okay, did you catch this week's?
No.
The credits, it's a 1972 song by Jimi Hendrix, Voodoo Child, if you know that song. Then I'm thinking, Voodoo Child. What a perfect time to have the title of that song be Voodoo Child. It's intentional. Right after we talk about, like, Vision, is he alive, is he dead,
right.
what's Wanda's powers in this, she says it's all Wanda and Voodoo Child kicks in. I have chills.
Man.
I'm not saying it's anything more than an Easter egg, but it's very intentional.
Yeah. No, I love that. I didn't even think. I think I was so shell-shocked by the episode, I wasn't even paying attention.
Somehow they're so good at, because, like, also Voodoo Child, the song, which I know as a guitar player, fits already the vibe anyways, because it's kind of like rock. It's like early metal, and it's cool, and it works perfectly for the credits anyways.
Right.
But then it's also from the 70s, which makes sense. And then it's also so ironic with this voodoo doll reference type thing, right? Like, I'm a voodoo child. Like, who is, you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying it's the literal, but I love these Easter eggs. Just like with the Westview sign saying, home is where you make it, right?
Right.
Perfectly a slogan you would use. But in this context, it's disturbing.
Yeah. Man.
So they've been really good with that stuff, I guess.
No, so point. True. Yeah, that is.
Oh my gosh. And then to tie up my first rant though, Robbie, that's my point. I think that's the extent we should pay attention to those things.
Right.
For those Easter eggs to add joy and be like, that's so cool because they intentionally chose Voodoo Child. There's no way that's an accident, right? Or Wake Up Sleepy Gene. It's perfect. But I think diving into that and trying to mine like more data of what's going to happen from this one song, like, oh, who is the voodoo doll? Right. That's where, like, that's beyond what they want you to do. Now you're no longer, like, you're missing the enjoyment of the voodoo child placement. Does that make sense?
No, totally, totally.
That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about.
Right. Well, and again, I think the biggest thing for me personally in terms of just not getting too lost in all the hype and just enjoying the thing itself is just not trying to import all of these other ideas of what this show could be or could be leading to, but even like just to the extent we're theorizing, just having fun with what it's giving us. Because again, you're talking about like digging into these Easter eggs is fun. And I think what we're intended to do, like that's part of the joy of watching the show.
Yes.
But I think that, yeah, like whenever you start telling the show what it needs to be in order to meet these other expectations that have nothing to do with what it's even trying to do, then yeah, you're only setting yourself up for disappointment, and you're kind of putting the show in an unfair position. And I think coloring it in an unflattering light in a way that isn't really fair.
Right. You always say it so much better than me. No. You're so much more eloquent, but that's, I guess what I mean is like, there will be some people that will go into the lyrics of Voodoo Child and be like, oh, there's this line where he says, you know, well, I pick up all pieces and make an island. What, like, who's the island? Like, where, that's what I mean. They're meant to be enjoyed. But I think if you try to get too much out of something that's not meant to be that much, if that makes sense, you run into problems.
Right.
You're trying to make something more than it is.
No, for sure. For sure. So this is just sort of a general thing about Wanda, maybe more so than this episode in particular or even WandaVision. But something that's just struck me, especially as we're talking about her kind of creating this whole alternate reality, isn't it strange how much Wanda's powers look and act more like they would come from the Reality Stone than the Mind Stone?
Yes, that's not a new thing to WandaVision, though. It's bothered me since day one. Because I always have to double take because I'm like, it's red, and she manipulates reality.
Right.
Like, what a perfect way to explain her powers. It should have been the Reality Stone that had done it.
Yeah, I mean, and part of me wonders, you know, because I guess Quicksilver's powers also come from that, which you could also argue would be sort of a manipulation of reality, right? To be able to, because he kind of sees things in slow motion and is moving faster than everything else. Like, it almost makes me wonder.
I think what happened was back in the day when they were making Age of Ultron in those movies, I don't know if they thought that far in advance. They just thought, hey, they have the scepter, which is the Mind Stone, and let's just say somebody could use that to experiment, and maybe they make these super beings because they're experimenting. I don't think they thought far enough in advance to be like, oh, shoot, it's not the Reality Stone. Like, why does that make sense with their powers? I think they would just say, well, it was an experiment.
Well, and I guess for me, you know, have we ever talked about no prizes on here?
No, don't even know what that is.
So it's kind of another one of these classic Stan Lee creations where as he was building out the universe, you know, way back in the 60s, and characters were having these interactions, every now and then someone would find like a plot hole where like, well, wait, if this character's doing this, then how is it that they're also over here doing this? And Marvel started awarding no prizes for whoever could just come up with the in-continuity explanation, where it's like you reckon, like the editors are basically recognized, like, well, we made a mistake, but you know, whoever can fix this for us by somehow making sense of it, you know, gets like the no prize, which is just like we basically call you out but don't give you anything.
Which is what you're about to do.
Right, right. Which I think is kind of fun because it's not like, one, there's a level of self-awareness there and a level of kind of humility. But I would like to say almost that, you know, one, I think if Marvel just wants to stick by, oh, it's the Mind Stone, then that's fine. They can do that. But I wonder if it's like in the same way that the Soul Stone kind of has a relationship to the others, like maybe there's some way in which just experimenting like with the Infinity Stone at all, like sort of, I don't know. I'm just saying like...
No prize to Robbie because that is a garbage explanation.
I'm just saying, I don't... Sue me if I don't want to end with just like, well, you know, because it... There's all this stuff with the early Infinity Stones that it irks me a little bit that they just hadn't. I don't blame them for having not planned out that far ahead, right? Like, who would have ever known? But I wish that you know, we didn't have the line in Avengers saying that like the staff is powered by the Tesseract. However, the reason I'm bringing this up is I'm like, because we have lines like that, and because like those are there within the MCU. That, like, the line, like, oh, well, it's powered by the cube, shows me that there is a relationship between the stones, or Fury just didn't understand it. I'm not trying to get way off on this tangent. My point is just, like, I wonder if there is, if the stones do have such a relationship that Wanda's powers could somehow be related to the Reality Stone, because they look so much like the way the Reality Stone looks when it's used by Thanos. But
I wish and hope that you're right in that way, because even like the Tesseract, for example, we know is the space stone. And for the most part, they've done a pretty good job of saying like, okay, Carol gets her powers from the space stone. That's how she can travel that fast, right? Like light speed travel. Or in Captain America 1, when they're blasting people with it, they kind of disappear as if they're going elsewhere. So it seems like in some other ways they had it figured out, some of them.
Right.
And then there's a few that it doesn't work as well. Even when Thanos is using the Reality Stone, it's red and it's like swiping red. It almost looks like Wanda.
Right.
Exactly, kind of. It like has that red, like dusty thing. So I kind of hope there is an explanation, but I fear it is just that they didn't think that far in advance about it, specifically about the power that it had.
Right. Well, and of course, I mean, the fact that the Reality Stone started as the ether. Again, Thor 2 reference. Right. Just shows
the Reality Stone is kind of the lone wolf here, right? It's a little bit off that one.
Yeah,
the others seem to make sense
for sure. Yeah, I mean, I think the Tesseract has its own things too. But just to the extent that like Fury,
yeah, when they say it's pure power,
yeah,
and energy. But here's the thing: my explanation for that is they just don't know. Like they're testing.
That's true.
These are humans that don't know about it. So they just read this like having power of some sort.
Right.
And they don't understand. But even at the beginning of Avengers, which I just watched again, they say like, you know, it's a portal and doors open both ways. So even at the beginning, they know that it does allow for some kind of intergalactic travel.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I bet we will, if nothing, like I don't think that Marvel feels the need, and I don't know that they should, to give us any more clarification on Wanda's powers, but I bet we will get a little bit of something like that, just because this is by far... I mean, you have to remember, like, we have never gotten anything close to a Wanda solo thing, you know? So, like, this really is the first time we've gotten any kind of deep dive into this character. She's only ever appeared in big movies where there were a lot of other... strands going,
yes,
you know, where they just couldn't focus.
She was
that
not
much
the central
Wanda.
Focus of any other movie,
right?
At all.
I bet we will get some deeper look into what her experience has been and sort of what the limit of her powers is.
Yeah, same. All right, is there anything we missed? Am I going to get a bunch of leftovers? Am I missing things?
Probably.
Or is this it? Because I mean, it was probably, it was so good. I loved it. I am going to go on the record and say I am anticipating that next week when we're talking about this, we will be talking about an 80s sitcom, I think.
Yeah, I would love that.
I think is what we're going to have happen. I would love that too. So that's my bold prediction. It's not bold at all, but that's my prediction.
Well, and I think we're going to end up having what makes me excited is I'm wondering, like, are the kids going to get older as we move forward? Like, are we going to get some, like, Malcolm in the Middle stuff in the 90s? Like, is Vision going to start being, like, more and more uncomfortable in all this? Like,
it's not going to be Malcolm in the Middle. It's going to be Full House because they cannot miss that opportunity.
That's true. You've talked about Full. You really want a Full House shout out here.
It has to be because of her connection to her sisters, who are also twins. Come on.
Who are her sisters?
The Olsen twins.
Oh, to her sisters. Okay, sorry, I'm thinking about Wanda. Yeah, that's true. That's so true. I didn't even think about the Olsen connection there.
I just mean that her real-life sisters are the Olsen twins, who were the little girls in Full House, and they're looking for a 90s sitcom. And Wanda herself has twins. It seems so obvious that it's got to be a Full House vibe. I mean, maybe I'm crazy, but they're looking. It makes more sense than doing Seinfeld because she doesn't have like a gang or friends. Right. She doesn't have like a gang.
No, that's so true. That's so true. And yeah, like you have the Jesse and Becky twins in Full House. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
I'm not a Full House fan, by the way. that's what I'm thinking is going
to
happen.
I like to think that we've just never talked about this, but you are actually like as into the Full House universe as you are into the
MCU. How dare you? It's going to be Full House. Gosh, I need it.
He's got like the red strings on the wall.
Yeah. Yes, like that meme. Guys, thanks for listening. We've had so much fun doing this. Keep listening. You guys have helped make this already like one of our biggest episodes ever, and that's so fun for us. It's keep helping us out by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, following us wherever podcasts are found, subscribe to our podcast, etc. Let us know your questions, thoughts, concerns. We like to work them into the show, as you've heard. You can hit us up at the FFW Podcast on any social media and the FFWpodcast.com. We've been getting some emails there, and that's been fun. What are we missing? What do we need? We specifically asked you guys some questions, so give us those answers. We're looking for them. We love that. As always, we will post something on Fridays when these episodes come out, but please do not put spoilers on our wall. You can email us or message us spoilers, which we love. We ourselves will not look at those until we've seen the episode, but then we try to get to them as much as we can.
Yep.
And we've had fun with that. Thank you for listening, guys. Gosh, I say that every week. I go through that whole spiel as if it's some offhanded comment, and I know you're already wanting to hit next podcast because I'm talking about it. But we genuinely are so grateful.
Yep, absolutely.
So next week's going to be so much fun. Episode 5 of WandaVision next Monday, and we will see you here, same time, same place, on Friends from Work.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.